When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers!
Pizza!
Tacos it is.
The one thing we do agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS.
Stop by MetroPCS with the whole family and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Requires new line. During congestion, the fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 40p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Good afternoon. We hope that wherever you are, that you are well today, that you and your families are well today. Our opening music this morning is an instrumental version of Carole King's I Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet. And it feels like some days here recently, like we can feel the earth move under our feet with all that's happening in the world. And so we want to welcome you to the Women Advance Blog Talk Radio Show, Advancing the Issues. We just want to take a moment before we dive into the show today just to take a few breaths with one another. This past week, right, and certainly since we were last together on a few Thursdays ago, things have been topsy-turvy in the world. And as we move into the summer season and as we think about how we want to try to find some time to enjoy ourselves and enjoy our families, and if we have children, enjoy them being out of school, I just want us to take a moment and take a breath and to affirm peace, actually, for everybody this afternoon as we think about the citizens, the folks who many of whom lost their homes and their lives in the fire in London a few days ago. Many of them, as we think about our topic for the show, were folks living, though in a global situation, living with income that was perhaps lower than the average or lower than the median income. We want to think about the folks in Alexandria and what's been happening as partisan politics just becomes more and more divisive. We want to think about all those young people, particularly, you know, many of whom were young women in Manchester. And then we want to think about in Durham just the other morning, a young man was shot. And so just for a moment, we'll take a breath and center ourselves and send good thoughts to all of those folk. And I want to encourage us all to remember that the only way we truly win is when we make a decision that it's more important to win than to be right, and that when we can be advocates for truth and stand in solidarity with the truth and stand in solidarity for one another. So as you move through your summer, as you move through your weekend, we hope that those things will stay on your mind. So welcome to today's show, Advancing the Issues. Our topic for today is income inequity in North Carolina and how women end up on the losing end. So before we even begin the show, I want to say this is not all gloom and doom. You know our modalities here at Women Advance, that we focus on what's the truth of our current reality, but we also want to make sure that we offer strategies for you to employ in your own lives and also for you to share with other people. So though we're dealing with the current reality of really deep income inequity for women in this state and underemployment for women in this state, we also know that our guest that I'm extremely excited about, are also going to be providing us with some exciting and wonderful information that's going to help us move ourselves forward collectively. So our guests today are Marian Johnson, who is a policy advocate with the North Carolina Justice Center, specifically with the Budget and Tax Center, and Mary B. McMillan, who is the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Good morning. Welcome. Good afternoon. My time is confused. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you all today?
Good. Thank you
I'm
for having
well.
Good.
You
like, it's a radio. Pretty good. Pretty good. I hope the Carole King got us all kind of moving and motivated a little bit and reminded us
yeah, I started
of,
to recognize it. Yeah,
it was good. Excellent.
Excellent. Yeah, good.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good. Very good. So I want to begin our conversation today by saying thank you to both of you for the work that you've been doing to make North Carolina a great place to live for all citizens. The work of the AFL-CIO and the work of the Budget and Tax Center digs deep into those places where sometimes we avoid because we don't quite understand the mechanics of unions or because we don't quite understand the mechanics of the budget process and the information and the policy and the data created in those spaces. And so you all dig deep for us consistently, and we appreciate that. As citizens of North Carolina and as a woman in North Carolina, I appreciate both of you for that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That means a lot, actually, especially in weeks like this.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. So I want to begin our conversation today grounded by some of your own words as we were doing some research and preparation for the show and getting a sense of the things that were important to you and important to the organizations that you work with. I actually first want to give you all the opportunity to introduce yourselves in a deeper way and then also give us a little bit of information about the bodies of work that you're engaged in with your organizations right now. Marian, will you start for us?
Sure. My name is Marian Johnson, and like Naomi said, I'm the policy advocate for the Budget and Tax Center, which is a project within the North Carolina Justice Center. So I coordinate our outreach and engagement efforts and basically try to translate all the analysis that's coming out into regular people talk so that everyone can feel like they can understand and own the budget process and how the tax system works and how it really impacts your daily life. And so, yeah, that's what I do.
So you make those numbers come to life for us, make them real for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Mary B., tell us about your work.
I'm Mary B. McMillan. I'm the Secretary Treasurer of the North Carolina AFL-CIO. We are the federation of our state's labor unions, representing 110,000 union members in all types of industry in the public and private sector all across North Carolina. As an organization, we advocate for better pay, safer working conditions, and respect and dignity on the job for all working people. And we believe that by working people joining together in union in the workplace and in the policy arena, that we can bring fairness and equity to our economy and our democracy.
An incredible body of work. And I want to begin, Mary B., with a quote from you and ask you to elaborate a little bit on this particular quote. The quote reads, "Let's usher in a new paradigm so it will be said that what's good for workers is good for business." So tell us a little bit about what inspired those words for you.
I do believe that what's good for workers is good for business, because if we paid working people better wages, they would be self-sufficient, they'd have more money in their pockets, and that would mean they would spend more, which means more profits for business and higher tax revenue for government. You know, workers are also consumers and taxpayers. We are the wheels that grease the economy. So what's good for working people is good for all of us. And one of the reasons we see such growing income inequality in this country is that workers aren't being paid decent wages. Our productivity has been going up, but over the past few decades, our wages have flatlined. So if we want to do something about inequality, it's a simple fix. Let's raise wages for workers, and that would be good for business, too.
Right. Right. So what do we say, though, Mary B., to those businesses, right, who will say to us, oh, I can't afford, just like when we look at the affordable care, right, and people adding insurance and benefits for workers. When folks tell us, I can't afford to pay my workers more, how do we respond? If I'm a woman and I'm advocating for myself relative to wages in my work environment, regardless of the work environment, whether I'm making $25,000 a year or whether I'm making $75,000 a year, what do I say to that employer who says, no, no, I can't afford to do that? What's your best advice about that?
Well, certainly when workers are paid more, they're more likely to stay on the job. There's less turnover. Mm-hmm. So that means there's lower recruitment and training costs for employers. You know, you hear the same tired old arguments over and over again from business and conservatives in the minimum wage debate, that if you raise wages, it's going to lead to job loss and higher prices. But those arguments really don't hold water. Costco pays decent wages, and last time I was in their store, it was packed. McDonald's pays $15 an hour or even more in other countries, and they're still selling plenty of burgers and making plenty of money. And now we've had 29 states in the U.S. that have raised their minimum wage, and those states seem to be doing just fine. We can raise wages, and businesses will still make plenty of money.
Yeah, yeah. So for those of us who want to have some impact around this, right, whether we are directly impacted by it or not, what needs to happen so we can help to create this new paradigm? If we want to be in negotiation and conversation with businesses, if we want to help folks who are working every day advocate for themselves, what needs to happen so we can create this new paradigm that you're envisioning?
I think, one, we've got to raise the minimum wage in North Carolina so people can get engaged, because the Justice Center and the AFL-CIO, along with a host of other organizations, have formed a coalition to push to raise the state minimum wage to $15 an hour in 5 years. So people can visit raisingwagesnc.org to sign a petition. You know, certainly we at the AFL-CIO believe that working people shouldn't be at the mercy of lawmakers to get a fair wage. We believe that working people should have the freedom to join together in unions and collectively negotiate to get better wages and benefits. So if we really want to take on inequality, we have to fight for the right for people to join together in unions.
Right. And I think one of the things that may be true for North Carolina, because of the culture of us being a southern state, is this mystery around unions, right? this kind of unknowing about unions and the benefit of unions. And in some ways, there being a direct pushback for people not to be engaged in unions, not to join unions. What's your best wisdom and advice around that?
Well, certainly one reason we have seen such massive income inequality, growing income inequality in this country, is because politicians have eroded working people's ability to organize and collectively negotiate. We've seen that as union memberships decline, so too has the middle class. And declining union membership has really lowered wages, not just for union members, but for all workers. So I think it's important to educate people about what the labor movement has done for all working people. You know, because of unions and people working together in union and the labor movement, we have overtime pay, child labor laws, better workplace safety standards. And the labor movement continues today to push for better policies so that hopefully all working people can earn enough to support themselves and have the freedom to enjoy time off with their families and create opportunities to create better lives for themselves and their children. I think that there's a lot of misinformation and stereotypes out there about unions and who union members are. You know, even in North Carolina, a state that's one of the least unionized states in the country, people interact with union members every day. They deliver your UPS packages and your mail, the firefighters, police officers. Union members are your neighbors. They're the people sitting next to you in church. They're everyday people that are trying to build better lives for themselves and their families.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mary B. Marian, this quote that I actually wrote down, you were speaking at Women's Lobby Day for North Carolina, hosted by North Carolina Women United, and you were presenting information. You remember that very well, very well. And so you talked about this, you introduced your topic for us by saying, you know, we demonstrate what we value by what we spend on it. So I'd really like for you to unpack that a little bit for us through the lens of women, this current budget that is currently being reviewed and dealt with our General Assembly. And even if you want to talk a little bit about the national budget, because I know the Justice Center gets that information as well. Give us what inspired those words for you, and how should we be viewing how women are valued in North Carolina based on what's happening with our current budget?
For sure. And I think that quote applies both personally and sort of publicly. So it applies to your personal life in that what you think is important, you will spend money on. So for me, like, I really don't watch that much TV, and so I'm not spending money on cable, but I am, you know, saving money to go travel a lot. I am buying probably more clothes than I need every month. But those are things that are important to me, so I'm willing to put aside money for that. And the same is true about the state, you know, like the things that our state finds important, our state will pay for. So if we prioritize things like public education, things like drivable roads, things like access to affordable health care, then we're going to see that reflected in the state budget. And so the budget really represents our state's values in practice. And North Carolina lawmakers basically set priorities for how our state spends money. So it sets priorities for what we as a state care about and what we as a state actually pay for. And so when you see things like the state government cutting per pupil funding or cutting income tax supports like the child tax credit, they're showing that they don't really value, you know, working families as much as they value things that they are willing to spend money on, like tax cuts that primarily benefit the wealthy. And so they can say things like that they support working families and that they support family values, but if they don't really put the money to support those things, then they don't really support them at all. They're just paying lip service to it. And we're seeing that happen in our budget debate right now, where we're seeing, you know, the House and Senate and the governor, we all have different budgets moving, and the federal budget is also sort of looming and presenting a lot of challenges for us. And we're seeing what they're willing to spend money on and what they're not. And we're seeing things like an attempt to cut SNAP benefits or food stamps. We're seeing, again, cuts to per pupil funding in schools. We're not seeing enough funding allocated at all for rebuilding Eastern North Carolina, where we see a lot of low-income families living. And so, yeah, there's a mismatch in priorities, I think. And the state government is right now spending a lot of money on things that do not actually help most of the state.
Mm-hmm. And help a very small percentage of citizens of the state. And if I would venture to say, I don't have the empirical data in front of me, but I would say that if we looked at where most of our tax base comes from, and then where how our tax base helps those who need it, there's a huge divide there, I would gather. I could be wrong, but I would gather.
Right. There's a huge imbalance. I mean, we're seeing, since we have this now flat income tax rate, we're seeing actually a lot higher tax burden on low-income households and a much lighter burden on high-income households. And so we're seeing, you know, an increase in the sales tax. We're seeing cuts to income tax credits and supports, like I said. And so we're seeing a huge bite taken out of low-income paychecks, and these bites are really, really small when they come out of high-income paychecks. And so the burden is really imbalanced. If you combine that with the fact that we're not getting as much, like as communities, we're not getting as much as we did before the recession. You know, we're not getting as much funding for our public schools, so we're not meeting capacity. We're not seeing, you know, Medicaid expansion, and so people are getting sick and in some cases dying because they don't have access to health care. So we are spending more of our tax dollars, and we are still getting less. And so there's a huge imbalance. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely. So as we think about that imbalance, and as we think about the great information Mary B. gave us a few moments ago about the levels at which workers are being paid, in this state and in this country. I want us to take a dip in the deep end of the pool for just a moment and have a small conversation about poverty. Poverty is something that we could, you know, unpack for weeks and days and months, and I am certainly not an expert on it and don't intend that you all would come as experts, but you have living experience and you have experience with all of these institutions that we all interact with. Nearly one in six North Carolinians lives in poverty. And so when we think about the information Mary B. just gave us in terms of who union workers are, like our union workers are the folks that we see in church or in our places of worship, the people who deliver our UPS, all of these things, when I think about one in six citizens in the state of North Carolina are living in poverty, those are those same folk that we see every day. And we don't right. realize, right? We don't realize it. So for a moment, you know, who is living in poverty in North Carolina? And I know and we know that North Carolina women are more likely to be impacted, right, by income inequity than men are. When we think about who's living in poverty in this state, do you all believe that we're clear about who that is? Are we missing our neighbors' needs? Do we have misconceptions about that?
Well, yeah, like you said, we have one in six North Carolinians are living in poverty, but if you look a little bit deeper at the numbers, you see that it is hitting women harder than men. It's hitting communities of color more than white communities and children more than older adults. I mean, around a quarter of North Carolina children are living in poverty. That's one out of four. It's over a third of female-headed households, and that's homes where a woman is the primary or only breadwinner, are living below the poverty line. And you see the highest county-level poverty rates in rural counties. So these are families and communities who are just consistently getting left behind when lawmakers make choices about what to pay for and what to cut. And so I think, there is a misconception about who's living in poverty and why people are living in poverty. I think it's not right. exclusive to North Carolina at all. I mean, it's sort of a misconception countrywide and probably worldwide that people are choosing to be poor, or they deserve to be poor because they're lazy, and it completely ignores the fact that you can work a full-time minimum wage job and still live in poverty. You know, you can't, I think they just released, the National Low Income Housing Coalition just released their research on this, that in North Carolina, you need to earn $15.79 an hour to afford a two-bedroom apartment. That's more than double our minimum wage. And so,
right.
I guess you could also, you could work 87 hours a week, which would be 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Friday, to afford two bedrooms.
Right.
Like Mary B. said, if we refuse to raise the minimum wage, if we refuse to have fair tax policies and invest in things that make our communities thrive, then we're going to be trapping people in poverty, essentially, and then these misconceptions keep on blaming people for being stuck in their traps.
Right. Mary B., I wonder if there's data from the AFL-CIO that where there's been success in a state, right, with raising the minimum wage effectively, that if there was a particular turning point or benchmark that got those policymakers to take the turn, or that got those corporations or employers to take the turn. Is there any highlighting that you can give us on that?
Well, I think people coming together collectively and making their voices heard is what led to states raising their minimum wage, is what led to, you know, TJ Maxx and other companies raising wages. I think we owe a lot to the brave working men and women of the Fight for 15 for getting out in the street and raising this issue. And as a result of that movement, you know, seeing municipalities, states, and businesses beginning to raise wages, because people understand $7.25 is a poverty wage. And here in the richest country in the world, we should not have people working full-time and living in poverty. And I think Marion made an important point that I do think there is a wide misconception out there that poor people aren't working. You have plenty of people working, you know, 60, 80 hours a week, often at multiple jobs, and they still can't earn enough to support their families. You know, the cost of housing, you need at least $15 an hour. Here in North Carolina, 47% of working people earn less than $15 an hour. You know, I want to you know, we spend a lot of time talking about the safety net programs to help poor people. We need a safety net, but we really need to address why people are poor to begin with, and it's that
exactly.
they don't earn enough money.
Right. Right, right, and there is money to be had, right? We're not living in a space of scarcity. We're not living in a space of scarcity. So, I often in driving, I have about a 30-minute commute in the morning, and I'm always seeing construction. There's always something being built, and I always think certainly somebody has some money. They're not building those homes, and that's not necessarily affordable housing that's being built. They're not building those homes for no one, right? Somebody's going to live there. So we know that there is money moving in our state. There's money moving in our state consistently. Can you believe that it's almost 12:30? It's time to take a break. Can you believe that? Let me go on for 30 minutes.
Not at all.
Yeah, absolutely. This is good. You've been listening to Women Advance, Advancing the Issues Blog Talk Radio Show. Our guests today are Marian Johnson with the North Carolina Justice Center and Mary B. McMillan, the North Carolina AFL-CIO. And we are talking about income inequity, and we are specifically talking about that as it relates to North Carolina's women always being on the losing end. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women Advances Advancing the Issues Blog Talk Radio Show. I am Naomi Filani Randolph, and I am your host today. Our guests are Marian Johnson with the North Carolina Justice Center, Mary B. McMillan with the North Carolina AFL-CIO, and our break music was Beyond Gidden. She said, I'm a moonshiner's daughter. I love that song. Welcome back. Welcome back. So before the break, we were listening to this great deal of wisdom from both of you as we thought about and learned about and talked about what it's going to take to help the state of North Carolina really realize its own greatness and be good to its workers, to raise the wages, for our policymakers to begin to enact policies that are really reflective of valuing everyone in the state, and specifically the women of the state as we focus our conversation for today. And so I want to shift our conversation just a little bit to think about this narrative around economic growth in our state. And so for a few years, we were having conversations or there was propaganda or a public narrative being pushed around the level of economic growth in the state of North Carolina. Folks were talking about jobs that were being created and corporations that were coming. We certainly know that HB2 kind of put a period at the end of some of those sentences because many events and many corporations decided not to flow through, not to come to this state. However, there was a huge public narrative around what the great economic growth in this state. But what we also know, and I want to hear your thoughts about this, is that economic growth without equity doesn't really equal economic growth. What are your thoughts about that? What were your experiences during that time of that public narrative? Would love to hear from you.
So this is the Carolina comeback narrative?
Yes.
That we've all been apparently living through?
Right.
Well, I think you're right, just that economic growth, when it's inequitable, is really not growth at all, and that's both from a moral standpoint and from an actual standpoint. I mean, if we're consistently leaving huge portions of our society behind when we're talking about economic growth, then, I mean, we're not talking honestly, and we're not creating a community or an economy that can support all people and can make all people live well. And from just an actual standpoint, I mean, if we keep on leaving behind, like if we continue to have racial wage gaps and gender wage gaps, I mean, we see the changing demographics in our state, right? We see that we're becoming a younger state, a browner state, and if we are still seeing wage gaps for communities of color and for women, then the majority of the workforce is going to be making less money as a whole. So we're just going to have a weaker economy because we're going to be having so many people who are making less money than they should be, people who are underemployed, people who are still working low-wage jobs, and we're going to see a real shrinking and condensing of high-paying or even just good-paying jobs. So fewer and fewer people will have good quality jobs and more people will have low-wage jobs, and that'll create a very unstable economy.
Yeah. So I want to pick up on something you just offered, Marian, relative to underemployment. Can both of you, if you would, talk to us a little bit about what underemployment is and how it impacts women specifically, but workers in general, underemployment?
Sure. Mary B., do you want to go first on that one?
It doesn't matter to me, Marian, if you want to take it first.
Oh, okay. For sure. Well, I guess for me, underemployment, that refers to people who are working part-time but want to be working full-time or who are overqualified for their job due to their education or skills. So in North Carolina, you see really high rates of underemployment in jobs like home health aides, restaurant workers, and retail. So these are a lot of majority female jobs. So on a really basic level, that's shrinking women's incomes. So women aren't earning as much as they're worth, and so they can't provide for themselves and their families as much as they could. And so that's bad just on like a – it's bad on a household level because we're having households who just can't make ends meet and who can't pull themselves above poverty or higher above the poverty line. And it's also bad, like I said, it's bad for the economy as a whole because we create a very unstable economic system that doesn't create enough room for quality jobs and doesn't create a ladder to the middle class. And so we're just sort of, we're seeing this division and polarization in our workforce.
And, you know, I think the issue of underemployment is, you know, also something that folks don't take into account when they're talking about this Carolina comeback or, you know, economic growth in the state is, you know, too often folks that are underemployed, we don't have the statistics for that. And so, you know, this narrative about job growth not taking into account the fact that these are often low-wage jobs or that these are part-time, mm-hmm. temporary jobs, part of the gig
right.
economy. And it really is not economic growth, as you said earlier, when so many folks are having to rely on public assistance, when they don't have enough money to, you know, to go and spend at local businesses. We can't mm-hmm. grow our economy unless working people have money in their pockets.
Right, right. Right.
That's absolutely right.
I think there's something telling about when you see. I've seen this in both portions. I've seen elders, like people who would perhaps be at this point in their lives drawing Social Security or living a more relaxed life, retiring, having to go back into the workforce. Either because they're having to care for a loved one or they've had a medical event that's draining the family's money in some way. And you will see them in underemployed situations repeatedly, which are stressful on them physically very often and also not really bringing in enough money to do what needs to be done to bolster the family's economy. So that's the family's income. So that's one example. And then young people, particularly young people coming right out of school, right out of college, and even right out of high school if they're moving into the workforce where they are repeatedly faced with opportunities that really don't give them an opportunity to be launched into the world in a real way. So if we look 30 years ago, folks coming out of college and going into the workforce were able to be upwardly mobile. Now, young people are having to return home to live with families, and very often we've got three generations now. I don't think there's anything wrong with three generations living in the same space if they want to. However, mm-hmm. the fact that it's a necessity very often, you know, is really it's very telling. Absolutely telling. We are Women Advance. We're advancing the issues. This is a Blog Talk Radio show. If you have questions, you can call us at 929-477-3578. That's 929-477-3578. Our guests today, Marian Johnson and Mary B. McMillan. I want to shift gears just a little bit more. So we've been talking about these kind of macro systemic issues, particularly you know, as it relates to the state of North Carolina and what's happening in our state. I want to talk a little bit more about this idea of income inequity as it relates to communities and looking at our state from a rural, urban, and suburban viewpoint. Are there places in our state that you feel are more impacted by income inequity than others, geographically or regionally?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is actually something that that the North Carolina Justice Center has released some research on, just about how you can look at, we have county level data on the wage gap, specifically as it affects women of color. And you can see exactly where we're having the most wage disparities. And you can see that based on any sort of, I mean, whatever county doesn't have the data on specific demographics, we just don't have it, but you can see mm-hmm. where it's worst for people. Generally, mm-hmm. I mean, you see higher poverty rates in rural counties, and so again, rural counties are constantly left behind in any sort of conversation about economic growth. But you are seeing high rates of poverty in urban centers as well. I mean, you're seeing very stark divisions in places like Durham County and Mecklenburg County, where there'll be really bustling city center and then really high rates of poverty as soon as you leave the city center. And so it's a statewide problem. I mean, every county is different and every city is different, but it's a statewide problem that's affecting, like we said at the top, you know, mostly affecting communities of color, affecting women, and affecting children.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just echo what Marian said, that certainly the rural areas have a lot of challenges, but you also see, you know, low wages and inequity in our urban centers. In fact, Charlotte, you know, is one of the worst places in the country in terms of economic mobility and folks being able to get out of poverty. And Naomi, you know, you mentioned earlier that it's not like there's not enough wealth in this country. And you think about Charlotte as this financial banking center. There is plenty of wealth to go around, but unfortunately, the working men and women who make the products, who provide the services, aren't sharing fairly in the wealth that we create. So you have bank tellers who count money all day, but have not a dollar of their own to save. Construction workers who build houses, but have no home of their own. It is, it's just a crime that here in the richest country in the world, people are working full-time and yet unable to support their families. CEO pay, it has skyrocketed. There is plenty of wealth, and working people need to share in the wealth that they help create.
Yes. So Mary B., tell me, if I'm living in a rural community right now and I'm listening to this podcast and I want to figure out how to bring unions to my community, to my county, to my city, to the place where I work, how can I start that process rolling?
You can visit
how
our
do I get
website,
engaged?
AFL-CIONC.org, and we have a form on our website that working folks can fill out if they're interested in learning more about how to join together in a union in the workplace. You can also sign up on our website to become part of our activist list, and I would also encourage folks to go to the Justice Center and do the same so that you can get emails from us about issues in the legislature or in Congress or ways that you can come out and make your voice heard. I think that it's critical for people to understand that inequality, it didn't just happen. It isn't random or inevitable. It is a direct result of policy choices by our lawmakers. And the good news is it doesn't have to be this way. If we join together and make our voices heard, we can change our policies and we can create an economy that works for everyone, not just Wall Street and the rich. So people really need to make their voices heard.
So there's a need for us all to stand up and to stand in solidarity with one another if we're going to move the needle on this body of work. Absolutely. So tell me, you know, we are living in interesting times. We have a lot of moving parts as lovers of justice in our state and in our nation, and there's much work to do. I'd like to hear from both of you why you choose to do this work. You know, this is not something, this is not on the list, right, when we're in fifth grade. So what do you want to be when you grow up? I'm sure that all of us are living in spaces and doing things that perhaps we didn't even envision in earlier parts of our lives. So why do you choose to do this work? What pulls you to this work and what keeps you in this work?
Honestly, I feel sort of like this work chose me, which is, I know, a corny thing to say, but I can't imagine myself doing anything but being an advocate. It's just sort of an instinct, and it has been for a time, and it's a passion as well. And just like, I mean, part of the reason I grew up in North Carolina, and I went away to college, and I worked in D.C. for a few years, and part of the reason that I came back was just because it was actually right after Amendment 1 passed when I realized that North Carolina was not the sort of progressive southern state that I had left, and it had gone down what I felt was the wrong path. And so I felt like I had to come back and be part of making us a progressive place again, making us a place that everyone can live well and feel safe in. And so it's just, yeah, I mean, maybe I'll feel differently in 10 years or maybe even 5 years if I'm just too tired, but right now it just feels like there's nothing else I could be doing.
Thank you, Marian. Mary B., why do you choose to do this work? What pulls you to this work? What keeps you in this work?
I'm in the labor movement because I believe economic fairness is the foundation for all other types of fairness. So if we want gender equity, if we want racial equality, we have to start with economic equality. And I believe that if we get economic fairness, then you're going to see fairness in our school system, in our court system, and in our political system. So for me, the right and freedom of people to enjoy the fruits of their labor, that is essential if we want liberty and justice for all. So I'm in this movement because I believe in the power and importance of economic justice. And I am always inspired by watching working people stand up for themselves and stand up for their rights and win victories. And I think about the workers at Smithfield and Tar Heel, North Carolina, who fought so hard together to organize a union in their workplace. And as a result, they've won better wages, benefits, and a voice at work. And I am inspired every day by what we together collectively can do. And so I have faith that here in North Carolina, by working together, that we can eventually change our policies and make this state a better place for working men and women.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for both of you, you know, we've earned the right to critique our state because we love our state. Tell me what you love about North Carolina.
I mean,
what makes your heart happy?
I mean, I love North Carolina barbecue. I think I get very up in arms about barbecue generally. I've been sort of an evangelist for North Carolina barbecue. But I also just really love my community. Like, I've never felt as home as I do feel in Durham right now, and I just love my community there. I love the sense of activism. I love the feeling of community. And so, yeah, that's a really exciting thing to be a part of, and so that's one thing I really love about North Carolina.
Nice. Mary B.?
I really love the people, the friendliness, the sincerity of the people, and as an advocate in the progressive community, I feel like the progressive community in North Carolina is strong and united and works well together, and I do believe that eventually we are going to make a big difference in the state in terms of turning things around for working people. I also love the geography, and while I'm not really a beach person, I love spending time in the mountains.
Nice. And so our final question, because it's almost been an hour, it's really hard to believe that time has gone so quickly. This has been such a rich conversation, and I have learned a lot from both of you this morning or this afternoon. What do you want your own legacy to be in this progressive landscape, right? We're all sowing seeds that we will see the fruit of our labor in some instances, and for some of us, we may not see the fruit of our labor in our lifetime. What do you want your legacy to be? Because you're creating your legacies every day. What would you have it to be? What would you like for it to be?
Such a profound question. I think, I mean, with the work that I'm doing now, I would want our legacy just as a team to be creating a, maybe not creating a, but like producing a state legislature that really makes the right choices for our communities and that really invests in thriving communities and, yeah, just makes North Carolina a place where everyone can live well and everyone can thrive. I think any steps we take towards that, that would be a great legacy for us.
Excellent.
I agree with Marion that if we could create a North Carolina where every job is a good job, where people earn decent wages, have the freedom to have time off to spend with their families, and to ensure better opportunities for the next generation, that that would be a wonderful legacy to have. I also think, you know, I will feel like I've done my job well if more people feel like they can make a difference by taking collective action, because I believe that's the only way that we are going to change this state and change our economic policies. So people really have to make their voices heard. They need to call the representatives in Raleigh and in Washington. They need to join, you know, groups like Women Advance and the Justice Center and the AFL, and we need to educate our friends and our families and our neighbors about issues and where lawmakers stand, because that's the only way that we're going to get the North Carolina that we want and that is beneficial for all working people.
The North Carolina that we want. Absolutely. The North Carolina that we want. And I think if all of us, that's that statement, we need a bumper sticker, Mary B., that says, let's build the North Carolina that we want. Because if we all committed to building the North Carolina that we want, I believe that we would begin to see tremendous shifts, right? Tremendous shifts in all of these arenas. I cannot thank you all enough for taking time out of your busy day, right? This is the middle of the day on Thursday, headed toward the weekend, and you were willing to give us an hour of your time to educate us, to connect us, to inform us, and to engage us on some of the particulars around the issue of income inequity for women in the state and for citizens of the state. And we are grateful for your time and your energy. This is Women Advance, Advancing the Issues Blog Talk Radio Show. Our guests today have been Marian Johnson with the North Carolina Justice Center, Mary B. McMillan of the North Carolina AFL-CIO. If you want to connect with either of the organizations, give us the websites, please.
Oh, it's ncjustice.org.
ncjustice.org. And?
And for the AFL, it's aflcionc.org.
nc.org. And we hope that you will also connect with Women Advance. Our website is www.womenadvancenc.org. We are a nonpartisan nonprofit serving the women of North Carolina. We're advancing the issues so we can help you also advance the change in your community. This has been an inspiring conversation for me. I hope that that we all can create the legacies that you want to bear for the state. I hope all of those things come to be. I hope all of those things manifest. And I know that because both of you are out in the world doing the work, that we're going to continue to move the needle on this issue for everyone in our state. And that when we have this conversation a year from now, perhaps, right, that we will see a difference and that we'll have that fight for 15 taken care of. That's going to happen. We have to keep pushing our legislators on that issue, and we have to make sure that we are pushing our policymakers around the budget and making sure that we restore the earned income tax credit. That's our favorite thing, right, Marian? We want that back.
Yeah, you know
we
it.
Want that back because it's important. I'm surprised you didn't say it today. I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it. But
I want that back. I was saving it for the end, but you got me.
We want that back. We want that back for everybody on a state level. We want that back because it's an important piece to help people be able to have more money in their pocket to do some additional things in their lives, like further their education or create a nest egg, et cetera. So that's an important piece for us all to remember. Thank you for your time. We appreciate your energy. We appreciate your work. And we want you to have a great weekend. Thank you for listening to Advancing the Issues. And we are signing off.
Thank you, Naomi.
Thank you all. Absolutely. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're closing today with another Rhiann Giddens piece called Factory Girl, and I think it's appropriate as we think about the work that we have talked about today and as we consider all of the pieces of the puzzle that make North Carolina great. Thank you, take care, and have a wonderful weekend. Be well.
The birds on the bushes did sing and sing. The lads and the lassies in couples boyhood. Then back to the factory, their work to begin. I saw one amongst them, she was fairer than any. Her cheeks like the roses that bloom in the spring. tree. Her skin like the lily that grows in yon valley. She was only a hard-working factory girl. When on me she cast a look of disdain, saying, young man, stand off me and do not come near me. I work for my living and think it no shame. The next morning I was there, ready and waiting, and bade her to talk to me just for herself. And each morning after she lingered still longer, and then hurried away at the sound of the bell.
We want to thank you for joining Women Advance, Advancing the Issues. Women Advance, connecting, informing, and engaging the women of North Carolina. Take care and be well.
When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers!
Pizza!
Tacos it is.
The one thing we do agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS.
Stop by MetroPCS with the whole family and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Requires new line. During congestion, the fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 480p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.
When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers!
Pizza!
Tacos it is.
The one thing we do agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS.
Stop by MetroPCS with the whole family and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Requires new line. During congestion, the fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 480p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.